Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hello, Carlos and fellow golfaholics. Did you see the problems that the 10th hole at Riviera caused for the pros last weekend? It was only fitting that the playoff ended with James Hahn making a spectacular second shot and putt to beat Casey and Dustin Johnson there. Wasn't that something? Hey, we've got a fantastic interview with Jeff Shackelford, who was right there to tell us all about it in our interview of the week. And 17-year-old Lydia Ko wins again down under. She's doing things that no one has ever done in golf. We got a lot of golf to talk about, Carlos. Let's go.
We have more than a show to talk about. So, but like you mentioned, great interview with Jeff Shackelford coming up on the VIG and the practice range. We're going to be recapping what happened so far because the PGA Tour West Coast swing, it's over, and the year moving east. So we're going to talk about that, you know, ahead of as an outlook to the Masters. But as usual, we take our Par 5 News to open the show. The Par 5 News are brought to you by United Golf Network. And we need a strong, big, long hitter, you know, to take always the driving. And who rivals Bubba Watson here? It's Fred Alvader. So, Fred, take the drive.
Yeah, if you saw me play, Carlos, you wouldn't want me off the tee. I'm more for around the greens. Hey! Davis Love is not going to have much time to practice and play golf over the next couple of years. In addition to being named U.S. Ryder Cup captain today at the PGA of America headquarters in South Florida, he's been appointed chairman of the PGA Tour Players Advisory Council. The PGA Tour announced last week that Davis Love was elected chairman of the Player Advisory Council by the Tour's membership for the 2015 calendar year. Voting ended on Tuesday, February 17th. The 16-member PAC, Player Advisor Council, advises and consults with the PGA Tour Policy Board and Commissioner Tim Fincham on issues affecting the tour. Love prevailed over Webb Simpson and Kevin Streelman for the chairmanship and succeeds Harrison Frazier. He will serve a 3-year term on the Tour Policy Board and as Player Director along with Bo Van Pelt, Mark Wilson, and Jason Bone. Next year will mark the start of Love's fifth stint as a member of the Tour Policy Board. Love is a lifetime member of the PGA Tour with 20 victories. The PGA Tour announced the 16 players serving on the PAC, the Players Advisory Council for 2015. They're Davis Love, Tom Gillis, Jason Gore, Charlie Hoffman, Bill Hurley, Freddie Jakobsen, Matt Kuchar, Scott Lanling, Will McKenzie, Jeff Ogilvie, John Senden, Webb Simpson, Keith Slocum, Kevin Streelman, Brendan Todd, and David Toms. And, you know, in addition to these PGA Tour duties, he was officially named captain today for the 2016 Ryder Cup. And, you know, even though they're not going to be held for another, 18-19 months, you know, he's going to have a full 2 years of appearances. He'll have a microphone stuck in his face with questions about the sad state of affairs for the U.S. Ryder Cup teams over the past 20 years. And Love, you know, he does have some experience with this. He was captain for the 2012 Ryder Cup team that was defeated by the Europeans after taking a 10-6 lead into the singles matches on Sunday. With the most recent loss to the Europeans at Glen Eagles in Scotland and the subsequent fallout between some team members and Captain Tom Watson last fall, the PGA of America is under a tremendous amount of pressure to get the 2016 Ryder Cup team right. Love is a PGA of America guy. He's liked by the players and by the brass of the PGA of America as well. He did everything right at Medina in 2012 except win, and that blame can be put squarely on the players. Maybe the players will make it up to Davis with a Ryder Cup victory at Hazeltine in 2016. And Carlos, next on the Par 5 News, I believe you have something from across the Atlantic concerning St. Andrews and the RNA.
I do. But before I go there, I just wanted to say a quick thing about Davis Love. I like one thing that he said, that whatever it's done in 2016 has to serve as the foundation as whatever successes or whatever is going to happen afterwards. So hopefully that works out well for him. Yes, let's talk about the Open Championship. You know, it may still be 5 months away, but the groundskeeping staff at St. Andrews is hard at work right now preparing the return of golf's oldest championship. Specifically, they're working on the Hell Bunker, a cavernous hazard on the 14th hole that has become one of the course's most iconic landmarks. And yes, its nickname is Hell. You know, Jack Nicklaus, the Golden Bear, the great one, you know, he once made a 10 in it. Yeah, Jack Nicklaus did. That greenside bunker at number 14 at St. Andrews is a beast of a sandy thing, and it's officially getting a facelift. According to the St. Andrews blog, this is standard procedure, and I quote, Hell Bunker is one of the four largest bunkers on the course. We work on a rotation basis and tend to rebuild one of the big four each year. A team of five greenskeepers started working in Hell, yes, in mid-November. A JCB digger was used to dig out old face, remove the old sand, and pull back turf on the top of the bunker. The coolest part of this is that they are adding a camera to it for coverage. And I quote, in years gone by, we only had one permanent TV camera docked installed into a bunker face on the old course, and that's in the road hole bunker. But this winter, we've added several more, including inside Hell Bunker. This will give golf fans all over the world a unique perspective should anyone find themselves in Hell during the Open. That sounds cool. Also, according to the blog, you know, the staff will rebuild a total of 50 bunkers this winter in anticipation for the year's third major, which was last contested at the old course in 2010. Work on the Hell Bunker actually began in November, and efforts focused around rebuilding its 10-foot face, with a sod laid at a 65-degree angle. Now, the players will be able to test this renovations in July 13th to the 19th when Rory McIlroy will be defending the title he won last year at Royal Liverpool. So, we'll see, but it looks really cool what they're doing there. And since we're talking about St. Andrews, you know, golf's governing body, the Royal and Ancient, the RNA, they have confirmed that they are in talks with the Ladies Golf Union over a potential marriage between the two organizations. Both are currently based at the RNA Ancient Golf Club at St. Andrews in Scotland. The members' club, which the RNA's name derives from, in a joint statement, the organizations confirmed that exploratory talks are underway between them towards establishing a more closely coordinated working relationship and the possibility of a merger between the two operations. You know, the RNA, as you all know, runs the Open Championship, and in addition to governing the men's game worldwide, why the LGAU runs the RICO Women's British Open and oversees the ladies' game in Britain. The RNA became a separate entity from the club in 2004 when they followed growing criticism that golf club refused to admit women members. The latest announcement just comes 5 months after the golf club broke its tradition as they began to allow women to become members for the first time in its 260-year history, following a historic ballot in which 85% voted in favor of allowing women to join the club. Fred, the RNA seems to be finally embracing this latest thing, huh?
I just don't know what the world's coming to, Carlos. Just, you know, letting women run in. The next thing you know, they're going to give them the vote. You know, I don't understand it. Hey, Carlos. Speaking of women, 17-year-old, I don't know if this is a woman or a girl or a young lady or how what's politically correct, but only 17 years old, Lydia Ko, of course, is number one in the world, and she announced she's already got her life all mapped out. She wants to retire by age 30 and go on to a second career. She says she will soon start an online psychology degree to prepare for life after golf. I say my plan is to retire when I'm 30, so I'm not just going to go to the beach and hang out for the rest of my life, Coe said Wednesday. There's always a second career that comes along with it, and I'm trying to build up towards it. And because I'm playing a sport, psychology links well with it. Coe finished second in the LPGA's 2015 Tour Opener in Florida on January 31st to become the youngest player of either gender to become the world number one, breaking the record set by Tiger Woods by almost 4 years, Carlos. My mom will get me off iPad and phone and tell me to work hard and look at the textbooks, Coe said. In her second year as a pro, Coe said she wasn't putting too much pressure on herself to win a major this year. Last year I had 2 top 10 finishes in majors, which was better than the year before when I only had 1. I'm looking for more consistency in playing in majors, and then one day that will give me a chance to be around the lead. Carla, she's already doing things no one else has ever come close to before and has redefined what it means to be a child prodigy. The Australian Open was Coe's 6th career LPGA Tour victory before her 18th birthday, which comes in April. Lexi Thompson, who won the 2011 Navistar LPGA Classic when she was 16, is the only other female golfer to capture an LPGA tournament before turning 18. Coe has 9 wins in pro tournaments, and she's still got 2 months and a handful of events prior to her 18th birthday. One of those tournaments is a major, the ANA Inspiration, previously the Kraft Nabisco. It'll be the first of the 5 majors held this year. If Coe wins one, she will join Carlos. Listen to this. Tom Morris Jr. in the 19th century is the only golfer to win a professional major at the age of 17. That's a pretty short list. If Coe were to win a major at any point this season, she would break Morgan Pressel's record as the LPGA's youngest major champion of 18 years and 10 months. So, you know, but here's the caveat to this, Carlos. Coe needs to keep her nose to the grindstone and not look back, because in addition to the dearth of great young talent on the LPGA, Hannah O'Sullivan, a 16-year-old high school senior, won the Gateway Classic on the Sumatra Tour last week in Mesa, Arizona. Her name is added to a pretty short list also. The youngest winners ever on an LPGA or Sumatra Tour event, Lydia Coe holds 3 of the top 5. She was the youngest when she won the 2012 Canadian Women's at 15 years. Next, the following year, she won the Canadian Women's Open again when she was 16. And then Lexi Thompson won the Navistar, as we mentioned, when she was 16. And now Hannah O'Sullivan is number 4 by winning the Gateway Classic on the Sumatra Tour at 16 years, 9 months. And Lydia Coe holds the 5th spot by winning the Swinging Certs 2014 last year at 17 years old. So, you know, this O'Sullivan girl, she was 15 under for 54 holes and won by a 4-stroke margin. After a win, she seemed more concerned about her upcoming week back in high school. I was getting a lot of texts last night, and I was trying to stay calm, but it is going to be fun going back to school tomorrow. I have a history test, a math quiz, and an English paper due, but I can manage, and this is good practice for what college will be like. She does plan to go to USC after graduating high school, but Carlos, if she wins a couple more Sumatra Tour events, those plans could change in a hurry.
I think the guys at USC are praying for her to stop and not win. Please don't let her play anymore. Let her come.
Really?
Yep. Hey, not far from there is a couple of states back here. We have to talk about Topgolf. They are coming to Las Vegas. You know, let me say this. Topgolf is a top-notch golf entertainment complex where the favorite local establishment with an extensive food and beverage menu meets the competition of golf. It has point-scoring golf games with dart-like targets in the ground that challenge friends and family of any skill level, from the kid to the pro golfer, all year round. The object is to get closest to the center bullseye, and the farther the distance out the microchip balls are hit, more points a person tallies. So the technology of the Top Golf concept is top secret. At least that's what they say. The way it works is that when it's a person's turn, they hit a golf ball containing a personalized microchip into one of the 11 targets ranging from 20 to 240 yards away. That microchip in the golf ball is detected by a reader, one of which is placed in every section of the target. The reader computes your score based on the accuracy and distance of the shot and then sends the score to your base screen. There's no need for pen and paper. You know, I don't think I would get any more points there. I wouldn't be a good one. So the Top Golf, I mean, I'm a high technology person, but that won't help me at all. The Top Golf concept was developed by two brothers in 2000 who were bored on a driving range in North London, England, who were wishing they knew how close to the pin their shots were and exactly how far their shots went. Although these two guys, you know, are hardcore golfers, the Top Golf concept appeals to brand new golfers and avid golfers. Servers bring food and drinks, including alcohol, like that, to the guests. Top Golf announced now that it is going to build a flagship location at the Las Vegas MGM Grand Hotel and Casino, located in the Las Vegas Strip. The Top Golf experience in Las Vegas is to be the largest, brightest, and most lavish driving range in the world. It is slated to open in 2016 and projected to bring in 1 million visitors in its first year. The facility with 105,000 square feet will sprawl across 8 acres behind the MGM Grand Convention Space. This is the biggest piece of land on the strip for a non-casino company. You know, and being Vegas, Top Golf is bringing this experience to a whole new level. The fourth level of Top Golf will feature a VIP area with water features and cabanas surrounding it. There will be 102 hitting bays on the three lower levels. Monthly memberships, leagues, tournaments, special events, and fundraisers will add to this experience. There will also be a bar on all four levels, a full-service restaurant, a locals lounge, and a stage for live music with a DJ. Top Golf Las Vegas will also have a lot more international flavor to the food menu than other locations. This facility in Las Vegas is expected to cost more than $50 million, whereas the other locations cost around mere $18 million to build. The economic output of the Las Vegas location is anticipated to be over a $700 million in a 10-year period. You know, MGM Grand calls this a win-win for everyone. Casinos are seeking out ways to draw new crowds and add non-gaming activities, and this is MGM's way of hitting the ball on the sweet spot of financial success. So you can meet the new future of Las Vegas, the Top Golf experience in spring of 2016. So, Fred, I was planning my thinking when I was going to go again to Las Vegas. I think I know now when I'm going to be going.
Do you suppose there'll be a couple slot machines in there someplace, you suppose?
I guess in the casino. Not far away.
Hey, Carl, you know, I have not been to one of these Top Golf locations yet. I'm dying to go. Sometime over the next month or so, we plan to have David Ogren, who just accepted a PGA Pro position with the Top Golf in San Antonio. And he's going to come on and talk about Top Golf a little bit and how they're doing down there in their location down there. So looking forward to that. Hey, Carlos, you know, with Rory McIlroy suing his former management company, Horizon, and, you know, just settling his two-year legal battle for a reported $25 million, athletes in their ever-changing terrain of agent and management companies has been making headlines recently. You know, Mark McCormick really started IMG, the huge management company, and he was responsible for developing the big three of golf, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player back in the 1960s. William Morris Agency acquired IMG last year and now is adding Icon Sports Management, which has top-name talents such as Ian Poulter and Henrik Stenson. IMG and its parent company has boosted its roster of clients and strengthened its North American business by acquiring the Ohio-based Sports Management. The acquisition is most significant for IMG since it was just acquired by William Morris just a year ago. The golf business ranging from clients to consulting to hospitality will be merged into the IMG Golf Division. Icon President and Chief Executive R.J. Nemer will continue to manage Stenson and Poulter. He also will become Senior Vice President at IMG and oversee all the golf clients. A list that includes Ernie Els, Patrick Reed, Hideki Matsuyama, and Lydia Ko. Nemer founded Icon Sports Management, and in his statement was, "We're tremendously excited to leverage this collective strength of our combined team as we continue to grow our brand both nationally and globally." He referred to the late Mark McCormick, who founded IMG, as a personal hero of mine. Carlos, with the huge endorsement deals and appearance fees that opportunities for these top golfers, it becomes mandatory that they have a top-flight agency looking out for their best interests and managing their money responsibly. So, the big get bigger, and you know the pockets get deeper. So, that wraps up the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network for February the 24th. And Carlos, just a word about United Golf Network. They want every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn some money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands, Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories, are available through United Golf Network. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, it offers every golf net the chance to earn commissions on the product through their director's program. It's a heck of an opportunity, Carlos. They also provide instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership in My Golf in U.S., which offers discounted golf rounds in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, For Sale by Owner offers you to sell used or new equipment right online. So visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And remember, United Golf Network was created by entrepreneurs to give golfers the opportunity to play golf, make money, and enjoy life. That wraps up, like Fred said, our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. Now it's time for our VIG, our very important guest of the week. And this week we have Jeff Shackelford. He's a contributing writer to Golf World and Golf Digest, and also to Golf Channel's Morning Drive every Monday. So we have a great, great interview coming up for you. So Fred, set up this interview for us.
Yeah, I've gotten to know Jeff just a little bit from press rooms of a few of the PGA tournaments that I've traveled around to here in the last few years, and have always wanted to have him on the show. And he's on the West Coast, so timing is always kind of an issue. But we were able to get together and schedule a time to talk, and quite timely actually, because he spent all week last week out at Riviera. He lives in L.A. and got to see the Northern Trust Open up close and personal, and he has some great insight into it, and really makes some really good points, and really a good listen here, a really good interview with Jeff to listen to, Carlos.
Let's listen to that interview.
We are happy to have Jeff Shackelford, who is a contributing editor to Golf World, with us. He also has his own website, jeffshackelford.com. It has a lot of great information. Jeff travels around the world following the PGA Tour. And Jeff, thanks a lot for being on the show today.
My pleasure.
Hey, you spent some time, you're based out in L.A., and I know you spent a lot of time at Riviera this week, and I know you are a golf architect guru. So it really appeared that number 10 at Riviera stood up to the test of the PGA Tour pros again this week.
I'd say it actually went a little over the edge, and I've just started kind of looking at some of the numbers yesterday, and when you have a 311 yard hole and the green and regulation percentage is in the 30s, that there's something a little bit amiss there. So this has been something that's kind of been looming and coming, and thankfully we got a little rain, so in the playoff it played just right. It could hold a good shot, and you got to see a couple of really great clutch shots there. But that said, it's great fun to watch, but I think some of the criticism on the telecast you heard was accurate, and the player view was stronger than that behind the scenes. A lot of guys would walk off the green. I'll give you an example. Paul Casey, very, very good student of old design, he walked off after a bogey. Now, he's hot, so I know what's coming. And he said, worst green on the PGA Tour. So I went and saw him after the round, talked him through the setup a little bit, and he goes, I was hot. And then, you know, you're right, the green doesn't need to be rebuilt. It's just a little bit in the setup. And we just had a perfect year, too, going into the tournament. Great weather, and those greens were bricks. They were U.S. Open-type greens.
Yeah, that little bit of rain allowed James Hahn and Dustin Johnson to make a couple fantastic shots in the playoff. Wasn't that fitting? It came down
to
that,
rain, those shots were amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. But wasn't it fitting? It came down to number 10 in the playoff.
We knew it. Yeah, 18 is just they should just scrap 18 from the playoff because it's just going to be pars there. It's not that interesting of a playoff hole. Just go right to 10.
Hey, let's change gears, talk just a little bit about Ryder Cup. A little bit of a surprise with Davis Love going to be named U.S. captain tomorrow officially, but why not couples? Why not Azinger? What's your take on that?
Well, the couples situation is just that they don't like the way he operates, and a lot of people don't. You know, he's sort of like Bill Murray is to Hollywood. He's kind of elusive, and he doesn't have a big team, and he's not an organized enterprise of a brand. You know, he's just kind of does his own thing, and it rubs a lot of people the wrong way. Fans, of course, love it, so then that makes the people behind the scenes even more irritated because they go, oh, well, he's Mr. Cool, but, you know, you can't even get him on the phone kind of thing. But the thing that really this all comes down to is the players enjoy playing for him. He doesn't overthink it, and that's really probably what the United States needs more than anything at this point, not overthinking this. And I don't think Davis is too far. I think they feel like they got a little of that with Davis, but somebody who will return their phone calls.
Yeah, his famous line is, why don't you pick up the phone and ring? Well, there might be somebody on the other end I have to talk to. Yeah, yeah. Hey, Tiger Woods has certainly been gone but not forgotten. What's your take? Head or physical? What's the deal with Tiger?
Oh, it's a combination, and it's the physical part messing with the head. And there've been a couple really thoughtful answers on this topic recently. David Duval on a conference call last week. I didn't hear him talk about it, but I read his comments and put them on my site. And Nota Begay, also, when he was on with Dan Patrick, touched on this. And anybody who's had injuries can attest to if you try to play through certain injuries, you just get into really bad habits, and then you also get into a mindset of being very tentative and almost afraid to go at the ball the way you want to go at it. And then that creates new bad habits, and I think that's what's happened here to Tiger, and it's just gotten worse and worse. The one weird thing that those who were in Phoenix said, and that I saw in person at Torrey Pines, is that he seems like he's okay, he's ready to go, and then it's just that one bad chip or one bad bunker shot, and I'm laughing, but it's horrible, and he's done. He just absolutely throws in the towel, and I just don't know what that speaks to, if that speaks to burnout or a lack of passion at this point, which is understandable. I mean, he has brought it for a long time with a lot of intensity.
Yeah, I think it's just a combination of things, too. He just doesn't have the intensity that he used to have. You've seen, he doesn't practice as much. He just seems as focused. I mean, he wouldn't allow the kind of stuff that's happened to him the last few weeks to happen, you know, back in 2000, 2002, 2005. It just wouldn't have happened.
No. No, and I don't know where he goes from here. You know, I'm going to do a poll on my site this week. I'm still kind of pondering it. What are the questions to ask, or what are the points to make? But it's a very strange situation to see somebody who is so good and to get so bad at the things that they were so good at, which was recovery play and shots around the green. It's I mean, we've seen players with the yips, but they were almost all of them were never great putters, and they just sort of spiral. He was as good as anybody around the greens as the game has ever seen, and now he's lost around the greens.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
We're going to get to see world number one this week at the Honda as the tour moves to Florida. What do you, you know, Rory's off to a pretty good start this year. What do you expect to see from him?
I expect more of the same, and that's, you know, good for him. It's amazing. He just, he's able to focus, and he was put that lawsuit aside and play well in Dubai, and I think that what I just saw at Riviera last week, while the players, some of them got kind of beaten up by it and beaten down, that was a great Masters preparation because those greens were firm and they were pushing 13 on the stip meter, which is a little ridiculous, but that's what you're going to see at Augusta. And that was a great examination those guys went through. And so Rory needs to play some golf like that in Florida. I don't know if he'll see that kind of set up and golf course, but it may not even matter. He just is, he's so good. But he is going to have a lot of pressure on him going into Augusta because he's such a clear-cut favorite.
Yeah, and everybody's looking to see if he can close out that career Grand Slam.
Yeah, and that's a big deal to him. He recognizes those kinds of things, and that's why people like him. He understands elements of the history of the game, and but, man, there are a lot of good players out there. I think there are several people who will have some nice Florida swings and go into Augusta to make it an interesting chase. I don't think Tiger will be one of them.
Yeah. Well, that makes a nice segue, though, into my next question now. You know, the young players have played, have really been the big story with the lack of Phil, the lack of Tiger. I guess we've had Dustin Johnson coming back and really playing pretty well, coming back from his suspension / leave of absence or whatever it was. But the young guys have really made the story out there. Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Brooks Koepka. What do you see going forward from this group? Is there anybody else that you really look for to have a monster year as a young guy?
Well, I was really excited to go watch Justin Thomas on Saturday at Riviera, and he had a horrible day. He hit it out of bounds on number one, and then on the sixth hole he hit a tree, and it hit just as hard as it could at the top of a eucalyptus, went about 40 yards left. He had to take an unplayable, go back to the tee, and it was one of those things where you kind of watch to see how he handles it, and he just handled it beautifully. And the parts I watched of his game earlier in the week, he's a very impressive player. He has a confidence about him. You know, Riviera was just beating these guys up, and the body language was fascinating. You just, because Riviera is a spectator course where you can look across several holes and see people, and you just see all these guys with their heads down, not enjoying themselves. And then you would come upon him and Jordan Spieth, and they both have this sort of constantly fighting, constantly grinding, very you know, they get down on themselves, but there's a positive vibe when you are watching them. Like, I'm going after this course. I'm going to get it. I'm out here to win. And it's fun to see that because you don't see that all the time. And that's why these guys get a lot of hype. I get kind of cynical about that because we always hear about the next Nicklauses and the next this and that. And rarely do those pan out. But that said, when you kind of get that vibe around somebody, it's exciting. And the same things happen with Jordan. You know, look at him at Riviera, lousy week. He just was kind of scraping it around, and he misses the playoff by one. I mean, I won't call it a lousy week, but every time I watched him, he just wasn't hitting the ball that well. And there he is with misses the playoff by a shot. That's a great sign.
Yeah, let's just touch on one other guy real quick here before I let you go. you know, Sergio was right in the mix. You know, even though better than he was playing, he had the lead with just a couple holes to go, goes bogey, bogey, ends up falling clear down to seventh or something there. But, I mean, the tournament was kind of his, and it's just one more thing for Sergio. What do you think about that?
It was strange. That's who I, you know, we had just a nutty final day, so I kind of broke off of the 10th hole and went to him when he was leading. And he chipped in on the 12th hole, an incredible shot, worst possible place to miss it. And he hit one of those chips, you kind of knew it was in all the way as soon as you saw it land. And so he goes down to the next tee, and their group was behind. J.B. Holmes was really slow, and J.B. Holmes threw his ball into the trees after he putted out, and Sergio kind of ducked. But he got up, and he hit a good tee shot on a hole that he'd hit a horrible shot on the day before. So you're thinking, wow, his body language is good. He's really focused, and, you know, he's going to win this thing. And then, he three-putted the 13th green, and which was a very doable thing. It was raining. He had about a 90-footer. But from there on in, he was just done. And he kind of got put on the clock, which was unfair because Holmes was slowing down, and that was part of the problem. But his putting stroke just completely left him. And then his driver left him. On the last two drives, he hit just some violent snap hooks, which you just don't see much anymore with today's pros. And
he just got to stop in his backswing. I mean, it got so short. I mean, he was only going like 75% of his backswing.
Wow, that's interesting because I did see that it was pretty short earlier in the round, but I was not there on the tees for those shots. But I was on 18, but I was taking a photograph. But he was 10 yards behind the Dave Stockton plaque. There on 18, which was 244 out, and Stockton had hit a 3-wood in there. And Sergio hit a great shot, right on the front kind of approach, and a horrible chip, just horrible.
Terrible chip, yeah.
And so it was just, and then he came in after, and his attitude was, you know, I was awful all week, so I guess it was a good week that I had a chance, and I don't know what to read into that. You know, part of me says, well, he's right. You know, every time I saw him, he was hitting awful shots, and he almost won a golf tournament. But then part of me goes, you know, so many of these guys come in, and I kind of like it when somebody says, no, I don't want to talk to the media. I'm in a terrible mood. I just blew a chance to win a historic tournament. It would have been a great thing for me, and maybe I'll cool off in a few minutes. And they're also media friendly now. It's incredible, and it's hard to complain about that. But you do kind of think there are players from a different generation who would be a lot angrier, and I don't know what that speaks to. If it's just the amount of money out there today has numbed them a little bit, or they're just gentler, kinder athletes. I don't know.
Nah, I think they're just all so afraid of getting ripped. Their managers and agents grill them so much that they've got to do this. It's part of the gig. And if they don't do it, you know, some media guys just rip them for it.
Right. Yeah. And I played college golf, so I know kind of sometimes after a round how you feel. So maybe that's why I wouldn't rip a guy for that, you know, but you're right. There are a lot of writers who haven't played, and you'll see it. You'll see guys go out and shoot 76, and there will be a writer there say, hey, come in to the locker room and I want to ask him about
it. Around, man.
They'll want to ask him. No, it's worse. They'll ask him about an article they're writing for, you know, St. Andrews. Can you might have a few minutes to talk about the old course, you know. Now they've just come in, you know, and they're livid. So you're right. Some of these people would hammer them, and not for good reason.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, we're going to let you go again. We really appreciate it. Come on, talk to us. Please, for our listeners, visit jeffshackelford.com, GeoffShackelford, jeffshackelford.com, and watch for his writing and Golf World. He also does some pieces for Morning Drive on the Golf Channel. And, Jeff, thanks again, man.
Okay, thank you, Fred.
Fred, I can't believe you have to bring in the Sergio.
I did that just for you, Carlos. I got Sergio in there just for you, man.
No, you didn't have to go that way. That was pushing it, you know. He said about players had something to say about Riviera and that Casey was out. I guess that he didn't at the end talk to Sergio at all. I mean, to honor Stuart Scott, Sergio had to be as cool as the other side of the pillow after that, you know. And he shouldn't be. And he talked about Freddie not picking up the phone. Come on, when do you see Freddie with a cell phone? Never. They should take note. You know, maybe he doesn't carry it. Bet if you call him at home or the chiropractor, you are going to get him there. You know, it's just they didn't want him. They didn't want him.
Yeah, Jeff just does a great job, and he's so knowledgeable, and I really enjoyed talking to him. I thought it was a great segment, but I had to make sure I got the Sergio in there for you. I knew you'd appreciate that.
Yeah, I thank you very much. Thank you. Well, that wraps up our VIG very important guest of the week. That was Jeff Shackelford, contributing writer to Golf World and Golf Digest, and also to Golf Channel's Morning Drive every Monday. Don't go away. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to the practice range. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range, where Fred and I every week pick up a subject, a topic, and then take our turns talking and giving us our point of views about it. This week, we're going to talk about the PGA Tour West Coast ending, and now they're moving to the East Coast for the East Coast Swing ahead of the Masters. Of course, they have some stops in Texas before they go there, but hey, it's getting closer. So now 5 weeks on the West Coast are on the books, and now the PGA Tour will make that 2,300-mile trek across the country to Florida, where they will set up shop for the next month. Hollywood, in essence, is giving way to South Beach. The Honda Classic begins a string of 4 consecutive weeks there at the Sunshine State, with a return visit set for early May at the Players' Championship. The two swings have distinct characteristics, different grasses, conditions, but the goal, of course, has always remained the same, that's to beat every other guy in the field. So the 5 tournament West Coast swing for the PGA Tour drew to a close on Sunday. The Northern Trust Open was the 7th tournament in a nearly 2-month stretch of great golf at some of the coolest courses in the world. But before we get to the East course, though, let's take a look back at the winners there at the West Coast swing. First, it was Bill Haas who came out on top in a congested final day as he broke from the pack with a birdie in his 16th hole and held on to win for the 2nd time that he won a challenge by a single stroke from a group of players that included Charlie Hoffman, Matt Kuchar, Sungjae Park, Brendan Steele, and Steve Whitcroft. Over a tenth of final round at TPC Scottsdale the next week, a number of players had a chance of securing victory, but at the end it was Brooks Koepka who struck the decisive blow on that par 5 15. He holed out from 50 feet over the fringe of the green for an eagle 3, and that lifted him into a tie with overnight leader Martin Laird. But Koepka parred his way, and his rivals drop away, and he won the Waste Management Phoenix Open, his first PGA Tour win. It was by one single shot over fellow Americans Ryan Palmer and Bubba Watson, and Japan's Hideki Matsuyama. The following week, on Sunday, Jason Day fired a final round of 70 to finish a 4-round total of 9 under par. That finishing number was matched by overnight leaders Harris English and J.B. Holmes, and also by defending champion Scott Stallings, who closed with a 69. But it was at the end of the day, Day, who was the one who came through the 4-man playoff to win the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines in San Diego. A week after that, Brent Snedeker, fire flawless 67, won the AT&T Bell Beach National Pro-Am by 3 over countryman Nick Watney. Second time he won this event. And that 72-hole total of 265 broke the scoring record he set in 2013. That victory was a timely one for him, moving him to 31st on the official World Golf Ranking, secured his place in the Masters, and ensured his likely participation in the three WGC events through 2015. And this past weekend, like it was just talked about by Jeff and Fred, on a difficult final day at Riviera, that tournament was wide open right down to the wire, with no fewer than seven players sharing the lead during the final round. But it was American James Hand, countryman Dustin Johnson, and England's Paul Casey who ended 72 holes tied at the top of the board on 6 under par. At the end, Hand defeated Johnson and Casey in the playoff for the Northern Trust Open at Riviera Country Club. It was Hand's first PGA Tour title. I know. I hear the questions about Serge. I just heard it. I'm not going to keep talking about it. You know, he just couldn't do it. Still immensely talented as well as unpredictable. Or should I correct predictable? Let's leave it like that. But some of the players that you have to mention about, Dustin Johnson. Hey, there should be no doubt about it. He's about whether his suspension leave of absence affected him long term. It didn't. He finished top five in two of the three tournaments he played and runner-up for the second straight season at Riviera. That run won by any measure raised those question marks some people may have about his off-the-course issues. But as Tiger Woods proved a few years back, you never know. So let's talk about Jimmy Walker. Wow, I really thought he was in for a drop-off season this year. But hey, the reason he won three times last season was because he was putting at an insane level when he never reached before in his career. Common sense says that at the end of some point, and yet Walker is 13 in tour in strokes gained putting so far this season, and he has another Sunny Open under his belt, and he's the leader once again of the FedEx Cup. So hey, it wasn't one night show. Let's talk about Brooks Koepka. He has arrived. You know, the American turned European Tour stud shut down the Phoenix Open and entered the World Top 20. If he wins again this season, getting to the top 10 by the end of this year isn't out of the question. Jason Day, great to see him back again winning. He has collected nearly $2 million for his efforts on the West Coast. He has only played four tournaments, and that's what three top fives, including a win, that's what it'll do for you. And hey, the Masters is coming, and that's the one guy that you would like to see there. Another guy that you want to see there that's doing good, Jordan Spieth. Wow, he started at the Phoenix Open with a T7, missed a cut at the Farmers, but then T7 and T4. Wow, this is a wrecking train gaining speed that could reach maximum and unstoppable speeds at Augusta. And finally, before I go and hand it up to Fred, I have a couple more to mention. Hey, Butch Harmon. Wow. Jimmy Walker, Ben Snedeker, Nick Watney, and Dustin Johnson in stable of big-time players. Two of those have won, and the other two Spanish runner-up. If he could only get Ricky Fowler going, who, you know, not time to press the panic button yet, but he hasn't cracked the top 40 so far. But, hey, he started slow last year, and we all know what he did. And finally, Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods, afterthoughts. Phil Mickelson only $50,000 won in that West Coast swing. And Tiger, I don't know. He's still not showing up for it.
Yeah, you know, there's been some interesting stuff, Carlos, you know, since the tour moved to the West Coast. You got, you know, a lot of Florida guys skipped the last couple there, Pebble and Riviera, since the WGC match play isn't in Arizona anymore. They moved it to a later date, and they're going to have it up in San Francisco this year. But really, you know, with the absence of Tiger and Phil, which probably is, you know, the number one storyline, the next best storyline is about the young guys. You've got Justin Thomas, 10 starts already, three top 10s, five top 25s, 689,000 in earnings, number 32 in the FedEx Cup. He is just off to a great, great start. Seems to be fearless, and as Jeff Shackelford noted there, he's grinding all the time. You know, he doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. He just keeps plodding along. So, you know, I mean, look for good things from this kid. You know, He's got a great start. He's playing with house money. He's got his year made. So, you know, and that's another point too, Carl. You know, this, we're 15 tournaments in to the year. So we're a third of the way through the year already. And it's not, we're still in February, and we're a third of the year. A third of the year is gone on the PGA Tour. The other big story, another big story for me, of course, is Jordan Spieth. He's just continuing. We saw him close out the year there in Australia and there in Florida at the Hero World Challenge. He finished strong. And, you know, he's now up to number 9 in the world golf ranking in 5 starts this year. He has 3 top 10s. He's 3 top 10s in his last 4 starts. He's earned $748,000. Just keeps going along, man. The guy has got it figured out. He's fun to watch. Really good player. And the guy we've talked about him before, you mentioned him, Brooks Koepka. You know, got the win in Phoenix. He's had 3 top 10s in just 4 starts this year on the PGA Tour. So, you know, he's still playing a European Tour schedule also. I hope he doesn't get burnt out later in the year, because there's a lot of golf coming yet this year. But, you know, we're going to get to see Rory, you know, as we move to Florida. You got the 4 big tournaments coming up in Florida. Rory's going to play at the Honda. You know, you'll see him the next week at the WGC. Cadillac there at Trump Doral. And then you will see him up at Arnie's place at Bay Hill. 2 weeks after that to close out the Florida swing. So Florida's going to have a lot of great golf with those 4 tournaments down there. And then probably the other big story coming out of the West Coast for me is how well Dustin Johnson has performed coming back after being away from the game for a while. So, you know, the reports were during his layoff that he was playing really well, working really hard on his game, you know, the reports were true. He has come out firing. As you mentioned, he's you know, got the top 5s or a couple runner-ups. And except for James Hahn making a tremendous putt there, you know, Johnson was actually closer, made a phenomenal shot. He just took that ball straight up in the air there on 10. And, you know, if it had been earlier in the week or before that rain, that ball still wouldn't have probably stayed on the green. But what a great shot he made out of the tall grass there, out of the Kikuyu there. So his game is in a good place right now. And, you know, if this guy is sober and his hands don't start shaking, you know, down at the ends of tournaments, he's going to win some big tournaments this year, because he's got a lot of physical ability. But really looking forward to the Florida swing, Carlos. Here's some of your last year's winners in Florida. Russell Henley, Patrick Reed, John Senden, Matt Every, and then Cheston Hadley won that little event out there on the island, you know, that I think you know a little bit about that one.
Puerto Rico Open.
Puerto Rico. Yes. So, yeah, and then you're going to have, once they wrap up here in 4 weeks in Florida, they're going to go to Texas for a couple tournaments before they move up to Augusta for the Masters there the second week in April. So a lot of good stuff has happened so far. The young guys are really the big story behind the fact that Tiger and Phil just are off to a terrible start, Carlos.
They are, and it's unfortunate, but, hey, you have to give way some time, and someday it will happen to the youngsters. And I really look forward to seeing what Jordan Spieth, who really, really is warming up, Brooks Koepka, Jason Day, are going to be there to challenge Rory McIlroy at the Masters. So I don't think it's going to be a gimme for Rory, even though if he would play his best. I think these guys are coming. They're good. And don't discard also Ricky Fowler. He hasn't started to get going yet, but, hey, he can get going in the big tournaments and remember what he did last year. So that wraps up our practice range, where we discuss what happened already in the PGA Tour West Coast Swing, and took a quick preview at the East Coast Swing and possibly the Masters going forward. So don't go away. We're going to take our final putts. When we come back, we're going to take a short break. Don't go away.
listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now we are to the final patch. And now I'm going to take a Tiger Woods. The golf cart is waiting. I'm just going to step out. I'm not going to finish it. I'm going to let Fred take the final 4.5 minutes and give his final thoughts before I come back, give my interview and my final remarks. So, Fred, take the final putts.
Well, Carlos, Woods has opted out of the Honda Classic, as we kind of talked about a little bit there. You know, with his physical problems, mental problems, whatever problems he's got, he's not coming ready to play yet, and he's not eligible for the WGC Cadillac in a couple weeks. So we're not going to get to see Tiger, but we do get to see Rory. So that will be good. And I just would not be surprised to see Rory win one or two of these tournaments. The three that he's going to play in Florida. So, we've got a lot of good golf coming up with that. He was playing at such a high level over in Europe, and I just look for him to continue on here in Florida. So, we've got Adam Scott became a father last week. So, Adam had that fantastic year. In 2013, he played pretty decent last year. Not up to the standard of 2013, but I look for him to have a pretty big year. It seems like whenever these young guys finally settle down and have children, it really affects their game and they settle in a lot better. Arana Mink is going to have the chance to host the 2018 BMW Championship in the FedEx Cup Playoffs. The PGA Tour announced last week, a story that we have been watching ever since they opened their doors. The Back Nine Network suspended operations last week. They shut the door and they didn't say this is it forever, but it sounds like they're kind of out of business, it sounds like. So their experiment of coming up with a second golf channel or golf-related channel to maybe rival the Golf Channel has come to an end. Michael Jordan is very frustrated with the pace of play when he plays golf. So he wants to build his own golf course in Florida and just make it like super private, and so if he wants to go and play, it can be in his own personal play yard, and he doesn't have to mess around with all the guys that take too long at the Bears Club and all those other places that he plays there around Palm Beach. According to some sources, Jordan has secured an option on a plot of land near Hobie Sound, just south of the Medalist Golf Club, which Tiger Woods and Ricky Fowler both belong to. He is going to hire a top designer and invite a limited number of like-minded golf buffs to join the club. He's going to keep the membership to fewer than 100, maybe some fellow athletes, buddies, and other people who come highly recommended. Brad Faxon said that he assessed the same property at the request of a golf instructor who at one point was contemplating building a practice field in. It said, yeah, it's got potential, but it's going to take a lot of work. It looks like it's sandy soil, but the land is flat, and there's not a lot of infrastructure. You gotta put a lot of money into building something. But I'm sure Michael knows some guys with some deep pockets that that can help him out with that. Let's see, what else we got here? Evidently, there was some confusion as to who uttered, well, I'll tell you what, we're down to a minute ago. I'll just turn it back to you, Carlos, and I'll close it out with that. How about that? Michael Jordan, we'll close it on Michael Jordan tonight. Turn your mic back on, Carlos. I think you're a moot.
Yes. A three-point shot there by Fred Alpater, and he won the game. So, hey, well back, Niners. That's us up. Another week on the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf, and thank you for listening to us the past hour. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Jeff Shackelford, contributing writer to Golf World and Golf Digest, and also to Golf Channel's Morning Drive every Monday. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also through TuneIn or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Frederico Peter. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.